Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi everyone, Simon here. Hope you are all good. Before I get to this week's guest, I have an announcement to share with you. We are changing the name of this podcast. Now, for a bit of backstory, the reason this podcast was called Don't Tell Me the Score was because it was due to go on BBC Radio 4's Today programme. And the idea was to differentiate these conversations from normal sports coverage, which focuses on things like tactics and, crucially, scores, hence the name. However, this podcast is clearly about life lessons gleaned from the amazing people I've been lucky enough to speak to over 2.5 years and 150 plus episodes. We've done some research. What it shows us is that Don't Tell Me the Score does not explain what this podcast is all about and can even leave some people thinking it's about, say, football, when clearly it's about life, using sport as a prism or as a window through which to explore it. So the new Ron Seal-esque title will be Life Lessons from Sport and Beyond. We'll be making the change officially in the next few weeks. Nothing else will change, certainly not the content, and you're not going to have to do anything at all. Now, do let me know your thoughts about this news. Drop me a message via my website, simonmundy.com. You might as well sign up for the weekly newsletter full of all the best nuggets while you're there. Or do let me know your thoughts on social media. I'm at Simon Mundy on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. To this week's episode now, though, with the four-time Ironman world champion, the woman who, and I quote, doth bestride her sport like a colossus, the peerless Chrissy Wellington. Now, the theme of this episode is around trusting your intuition, but we also discuss connection, what we can learn from children, how we all have innate and intrinsic value, and much more besides. So, without further ado, I bring you Chrissy Wellington. Chrissy Wellington, how are you?
Very well. It's so wonderful to be back on the podcast.
I have been crunching the numbers, and it's 2 years since you were last on the podcast, August 2019. Well worth going back and listening to that if you haven't already. That was on the BBC, BBC Sounds. You share loads of lessons and nuggets, particularly around not just surviving, but thriving during the pain of an Ironman competition, which can be related to any sort of circumstance in life. But since we recorded, I've been very fortunate to develop a friendship with you. We've spoken lots. We've put our heads together on a few projects. And this is something that I'm very appreciative of the podcast generally, is developing friendships with many of my listeners, many guests, international athletes, Olympic champions, psychologists, whoever they may be. And developing those relationships, genuine relationships and friendships, has been amazing. And you clearly, for me, fall into that bracket. I really appreciate the friendship that we've been able to develop and getting to know you, so Chrissy the person, beyond your athletic achievements, which are legendary. You're a four-time Ironman world champion, undefeated world record holder. It compares with what anyone's achieved in any sport. But getting to know you, the person, your values, your humility, your kindness, your humor, just simply you, the person. That's what I'm really grateful for. Just getting to know you on a level, it is something I'm hugely grateful for.
Thank you. And I really appreciate that. It's very humbling. And it just speaks to the importance of connection. And it's the one thing we've found, I'm sure we've all found really hard over the past year, is the inability to connect in a really rich and meaningful way with people. But nonetheless, we have been brought together, maybe in ways we wouldn't have envisaged, using technologies that we may not be familiar with and we're not very adept at using. I speak for myself, but it really is important. And going forward, I hope that society more generally doesn't lose that ability to connect in a meaningful way, because I think it's what we've missed. I think it's what we took for granted, and hopefully it's what we'll invest time in going forward.
It's very true that connection is so important. Very few things rank more highly in terms of our needs, bar, for example, food, drink, and shelter. Certainly for me, connection is one of, if not my highest value. I'm lucky enough to do work that tallies with that, but it's become into such sharp focus during lockdown. If I neglect that part of my life with people I care about, with friends, with family, then I pay a bit of a price. And so the importance of connection has been brought into even more sharp focus for me over the last 18 months or whatever, with the lockdowns and the pandemic. Has it been brought into sharper focus for you too?
I think there are many different aspects to connection. So there's that connection with others, with your family, with your friends, with your work colleagues. And obviously there's been changes to that through the pandemic, and some have been incredibly difficult, being apart from loved ones and seeing your loved ones apart as well. You know, for example, our daughter not being able to hug her grandpa. So that's been really difficult. But what it has brought me is, I think, a connection with myself. So it's given me the chance to create space for myself and to slow down a little bit and to understand a bit more about who I am, what's important to me, what I care about, what my purpose is. So it's given me that, I think, a deeper connection with myself and a deeper connection with the environment, the world around me. We moved to a small rural village in Somerset. But really, our whole experience of living here has been during the pandemic. So it's enabled me to connect a lot more with where we live and my natural environment. And as someone that has spent a lot of time, like you, traveling, like many athletes, traveling all over the world, flying into different places, and that's an absolute privilege and a blessing. But it's been nice to connect with where I live. So yeah, I think in short, I've connected on many different fronts, and hopefully we'll focus on nurturing that over you know, over the years ahead.
When we spoke previously, we spoke about, for example, how you tried to adapt your self-talk and you'd struggled at times with a bit of an abusive inner critic. When you were younger, you had an eating disorder. And so for me, connecting to self is about self-acceptance. What does it mean to you?
It means understanding who I am. And when I transitioned away from professional sport, that was a really challenging time because it brought all of those things into question. So I didn't know who I was, and I didn't know what mattered to me, and I didn't know what my purpose was. At least I didn't have that clarity. So for me, it's that clarity of purpose that's so important. And then underpinning that, understanding really what my values are and what values I want to live by.
What would you say your values are?
Humility, reliability, dependability, trustworthiness. I'd like to think I was motivational and inspirational, and you know, we all want to try and live by those values. It's work in progress, isn't it?
Yeah. And when it comes to self-acceptance, because you have obviously been driven to some degree by a little bit of disquiet at times, where are you or how are you in terms of self-acceptance now? Because we all have things that we like about ourselves more than other parts, perhaps. But I think a realization for me has been around understanding that the rough comes with the smooth. So the good comes with the bad. And for me, it's understanding that, yes, we have those bits that we like, but also you need to give that same love to the bits that we don't like. That's been my big revelation. Where are you at with self-acceptance?
I think it's been really important for me not to be as self-critical, because that it's incredibly debilitating. For me, not labeling things as good and bad is really, really important. And that's something our daughters taught us. There's not good or bad feelings or emotions. They just are.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's really, really important. I've learned a lot from from being a parent, and I was guilty initially, Simon, of wanting her to be perfect. And I'm really ashamed to admit that, seeing her as an extension of me. So wanting her to be happy all the time, wanting her to be very forthcoming when she met people that she knew or that she didn't know, hating it when, you know, she'd tantrum like all children do, or cry over something that we think is totally irrational, as children actually do. And I realized that all of those emotions that she's experiencing are not good or bad, and it's not for me to judge them. They just are, and you work with them. And children are such a they're such great teachers, you know. We've spoken a bit about the power of intuition, you know, and I trust my intuition a lot. I've used it to guide me throughout my life and to step off the path at many different times. And children are very intuitive, aren't they? And instinctive. And I think we can learn a lot from that, because I think our intuition is very, very powerful. And there can be kind of paralysis by analysis, as my old coach used to say. You overthink everything. But inside, if you give yourself a bit of space that maybe we've had over the past year, some of us, not, you know, obviously not all of us have been that fortunate. But if you have that space, that quiet, you intuitively know and instinctively know what is right. And I think children do that too.
Absolutely. And as you know, I'm a big believer in what children and babies and stuff can teach us. And we've spoken about this before in terms of that Esme, your daughter, just being, she just is, and that's enough. And I think we sometimes lose sight of the fact that just being is enough. And I think, you know, that's perhaps something we'll come back to. And just you touched...
just being in terms of the way she acts, but just being in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, she is present in a way that I envy so much. You know, they're just present. They're not thinking about... what are they going to cook for dinner tomorrow? No, have I taken the meat out the fridge?
What did I say at the party wrong last night? Nothing like that.
Exactly. They're not. They're just looking at that ladybird or that leaf or that beetle or, you know, flying over the cut on their knee. And so, yeah, that ability to be present. And you think, as an athlete, that's one of your key skills. If people say, you know, how do you cope with pain? How do you cope with comfort? I say, well, I'm very much in the moment. You segment the race or the training session down and you very much focus on the moment. And I'd like to think that I was good at that, but sometimes I'm really not. Really.
Yeah, of course, right? And certainly not as we get older. But so just to go back to the child analogy again. So, you know, like you say, children are naturally very present. They are. I would say they are and they're aware. For example, you said about, you know, there are no feelings that are good or bad. You know, their feelings are just feelings. They're just there to tell us something. And it's the narrative that we attach to them that makes feelings bad, for example. And that got me thinking in terms of you as an athlete, because so the pain that you experience training or when racing, you could get a good narrative around that in your head. Because in training, you knew that the suffering that you were going through, for example, was feeding into the bigger goal. So to me, there's something really around the narrative that we attach to, like you say, feelings and emotions and stuff like that, that are inherently neutral.
I think contemporary society wants everything to go perfectly. We have these airbrushed images of people's lives. We hear about people's successes and what they've achieved and, you know, what they're able to afford and the beautiful clothes they wear. And we want everything to go perfectly. But life isn't like that. And a race is a microcosm of that. And it's a race is, and a sporting career and life generally is beautiful because you are encountering triumph and disaster, in Rudyard Kipling's words, you know, the highs and the lows. That's what makes it beautiful. And that, you know, so I always went into your race, so to your point about pain and discomfort, it's about framing it through a different lens. So instead of fearing it and worrying about it, I accepted it, but also to your point, embraced it. And in that way, it was a perfectly natural state for me to be in when I was training, when I was racing, to be in a state of discomfort and pain and be comfortable with that. So I think reframing it as something positive and as a growth opportunity for me was really, really important. I also coped with it, like I mentioned before, just by breaking the race down. So all these kind of psychological strategies you have, breaking the race down, you know, having a mantra, all of those, you know, positive visualization techniques, the power of recollection, Simon. You know, every race I ever did, I wanted to quit. And so I recalled those moments in the next race. And obviously knew that I was able to override the feelings or that they were ephemeral and wouldn't last. So I think to summarize, what we need to accept is that life is not perfect, but that's what makes it perfect. And that's what my last race taught me. It was an absolute car crash. Well, it was in terms of all the different things I encountered before and the pain and discomfort I went through during. And I managed to achieve more than I ever imagined possible. But I also realized that not everything in the lead up, not everything in that race went perfectly, but yet it was the most perfect of races. And that was so liberating. And I think taught me that we achieve not despite of adversity, but probably because of it.
Yeah. You quoted Rudyard Kipling, so, you know, the highs and lows of life, and this comes back as well to that, what I was saying about self-acceptance or acceptance generally, is that, you know, we have a natural inclination to want to cling to quote unquote positive experiences, good experiences, and push away bad experiences, feelings, thoughts, whatever they may be. But it's that constant cycle of grasping and pushing away. That's the suffering. A high is only a high because it comes with a low. So it's, if you can treat those the same, then, you know, you can drastically reduce the amount of suffering that you experience. And that's obviously, you know, what you are able to do within a race in particular. Were you able to take that lesson from your racing, and have you been able to then apply that more broadly into life?
Racing for me was a season of life, and I applied it when I transitioned away from professional sport, because that was a really challenging time. It was a very uncomfortable time. So not a physically uncomfortable time like in a race, but a psychologically uncomfortable period. And don't get me wrong, Simon, I was so fortunate and blessed to have a career as a professional athlete. And you know, as an athlete, that you have to move away and transition away from the sport at some point. But the challenges and some of the tragic challenges that people face retiring from professional sport speaks to how difficult it is. And, you know, it's analogous maybe to people that move away from a career in the military. You have a very regimented life. You have a goal. You have a purpose. You have an identity that is wedded to, for me, an outcome. And you have financial security. You have, you know, the isolation, all of those things, and all of a sudden you go into a space where, like I said before, you don't know who you are, what matters to you, how you should spend your day, how you're going to earn a living, why people value you if it's not for the label you've attached to yourself. So I think that was a period in my life where I had to cope and be comfortable with a void, with a not knowing. And as humans, and as athletes especially, oh my gosh, we crave control. We want to control everything. I want to control what I eat, how much I sleep, you know, who does my massage, what my bike mechanic is doing. You know, I want to control the minutiae. I want to control everything, but yet you can't. And I felt very out of control when I transitioned away from sport. But in all honesty, that's why I needed to do it, because the easiest thing for me, especially psychologically, would have been to have remained as a professional athlete. For all the reasons I said, you know, I was a winning athlete. I'd achieved a lot. I had structure and focus. I had financial security. My partner then, my now husband, was also an athlete, and it was very easy to stay in that comfort zone. And some would think it's slightly ironic to call an Ironman, you know, career, you know, a comfort zone. But for me, it was. And to be out of my comfort zone was to leave that, and to be comfortable in the not knowing. And I think we shy away from that, don't we? Because we want that certainty. And we're afraid to step off the path. We want cast iron guarantees that if I leave this career, I can achieve this in my next career. If I achieve this relationship, I'll meet someone else. And sometimes life isn't like that. And I've stepped off the path and I've stepped into the unknown. And that's, in retrospect, where all the incredible opportunities have arisen and where all of my growth has taken place. So stepping off the path for me into the unknown, whilst uncomfortable, has been really, really important.
Yeah. Certainty, I mean, is an illusion. We don't know what's going to happen half an hour from now, really, let alone tomorrow or next year or whatever. I mean, the last year has really sort of proved that. And before we dive into intuition in particular, I just want to ask you, because you mentioned there about an identity, something I think we'll come back to, but you mentioned there about, you know, when you transitioned out of being an elite athlete, you questioned, do I have value? And I know, obviously, you were very academic at school. And you said that you felt like you needed a label to validate that academic success, which is what led you to initially pursue a career in law. Do you think now that you understand that your value is innate? And we've spoken about this with Esme, like, you know, she doesn't have to do anything, or any child doesn't have to do anything to have innate value. And yet often as we get older, we lose sight of that fact. But are you in touch with that innate value in yourself now more or not?
I understand with clarity what my purpose is. I'm increasingly understanding what my value is as a person. But I think it's work in progress for me. It was a really important point in my life where I realized that I wasn't living a life that was authentically me, that I'd lost sight of what actually mattered to me. And you mentioned me transitioning away from that focus on law. And it was, you know, that was quite the inflection point, I think, because like you said, I'd achieved my academic goals. I'd signed for a law firm in London and I went travelling, took a gap year prior to starting my law conversion course and then starting work. And it was in Africa that I saw things that inspired and troubled me in equal measure. You see the beauty and you see the absolute abject poverty, but it ignited this fire in me and precipitated a lot of questions. And I spoke to a friend that I'd made in Africa and she said something quite profound, and it was, Chrissy, look deep inside yourself and work out what your passion really is. And I hadn't done it, Simon, because I, as you mentioned before, was following a path that was expected of me. And I wanted the label, I wanted the validation, but I wasn't living my authentic life. And so I did a lot of introspection at that point. And that was the first time, I think, in my life I'd stepped off that path, and instead of going into law, did my MA in international development up in Manchester, and that was really, really important, and a really important lesson to me about living authentically, and rather than doing what was expected, living a life that I felt fulfilled my purpose.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, yeah. Last thing on this, and that, excuse me for hammering the point, right? Because like I've said to you before, we had that chat, right, about Esme just being, right? So she doesn't have to do anything to have innate value, right? She doesn't even need to have a purpose to have innate value in your eyes. Is that true?
That's true.
So my point, I guess, is our inability as we get older to turn that same view round on ourselves. Because I totally get your point, right, around purpose and values. And I think those are fundamental to, you know, growing to be the person we want to be. But at the same time, I think you need to have that understanding that whatever you do, whatever you achieve or not, that innate value is innate. It's a birthright, you know, and I think it's so obvious when a child is born that that is the case. And, you know, you see it in your daughter as clearly as anything, but then it's turning that around on ourselves that we sometimes we lose touch with. And I guess that was what I was getting at. Any just quick thoughts on that?
It's really thought-provoking. I think we could talk for hours about it. I think what's been important for me is to move away from being Chrissy Wellington, four-time Ironman world champion, and that being the label that people are inspired by, and instead thinking more about the process that I went through to get there as being the thing that inspires people. So I'd hope that maybe, yes, people are inspired by that, by that label and that title, but hopefully they're inspired by, you know, the integrity or the enthusiasm or the hard work or the drive or the dedication or you know, all of those things. So I've tried to focus on that and realize that I can touch people not so much from having that label, but from the way in which I do things, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Which leads us actually quite nicely into intuition. Now, as you know, I think in terms of sporting success stories or sporting champions that I have either had the fortune to interview or I've just researched or read about or whatever, I really think the way you followed your intuition, it was an exploration, wasn't it? There wasn't this early on, oh, I want to go and be four-time Ironman world champion or break the world record holder. It never was like that. You followed your intuition and bobbed and weaved and it led you there. So it was almost like that sense of exploration. And it just happened to be that waiting for you were four Ironman world championship titles and the world record. So yeah, about that intuition, because as well, I know that you said that you are, you know, you are very, you're sensitive to the world around you. When you were overseas, that made you rethink your career in law. What do you think is the relationship between being sensitive and intuition? And what would be your words of wisdom on intuition?
We lead really busy lives, and I think people carry that busyness now with a badge of honour. But if we can find a bit of a space of quiet, I think we all have that intuition deep inside about what path we should take and what matters to us and what choices, quote unquote, right. But just to reflect back on what you were saying before, you make it sound like I kind of fell into professional sport, and that isn't necessarily the case. I think it's a bit, I wouldn't want to claim that I kind of just intuitively just followed this gut instinct and, oh my gosh, here I am as a professional athlete. It was a journey of a million steps. It wasn't something that was, you know, predetermined, and it wasn't something that, unlike, you know, athletes like Serena Williams, David Beckham, it wasn't something that a Tiger Woods that I focused on from a very, very young age. But I think all of the different steps I took in my life, some of which had nothing to do with sport, led me to the door of professional sport. I think it was really important to me to surround myself with the right people. So I trusted my intuition, but I also relied heavily on others around me. I think it's really important to be accepting of the unknown. So to be accepting of that lack of clarity about when, you know, if you decide to take a step, you might not know what the outcome is. But that's okay. Keep things in perspective. So, you know, always say, you know, what's the worst I can happen? And ultimately think of the positives. So for me, when I transitioned away from working for the government into being a professional sports person, I knew that I never wanted to look back and think, what if? I never wanted to be left wondering. So the fear of doing it was outweighed by that fear of not knowing.
So many people have that choice point, don't they? And it's like, okay, which is the fear that wins, let's say? Is it the fear of, well, if I don't go, I'll never know if I could have done that? But in terms of intuition, you know, for me, I think the more I listen to it, the more I trust it. And I've been asked how I would describe it. And to me, it is just this, it's not a writing up a list of pros and cons or a list in my mind. It's just a feeling, really. And learning to trust it more and more and more has, in my experience, enabled me to trust it more and more. Have you developed trust in your intuition? And has it shown itself to be a really good guiding light for you throughout your life?
We all have intuition. We don't always listen to it. I've tried to do that throughout the course of my life. I think there are times when I haven't, and I've regretted that. So I knew intuitively that law wasn't right for me. I knew intuitively that working in international development was. I knew something was calling me to go and live and work in Nepal, even though we were just about to assume the presidency of the G8 and the EU, and my job would, you know, I would have assumed a lot more responsibility in my job. I just knew intuitively I had to step off the path and go and live and work in Nepal. Again, as a professional athlete, I was scared-less about that, you know, for many, many different reasons. But again, did that. And again, when I moved away from it, intuitively, I knew that it was the right point for me. But, you know, there are times when I haven't listened to it. For example, so I wrote my autobiography in 2010 and 11, and kind of was published in 2012. And we were looking for someone to write the foreword for that, and wanted it to be someone high profile, because I wanted to get my autobiography into as many people's hands as possible. Not, you know, for financial reasons, but because I just felt that it was a really, I hoped it was a really inspirational story that could touch lives and inspire people. And so I wanted someone that had a high profile that would capture the public's attention. And I was asked by the publisher whether Lance Armstrong would be an appropriate person to write a foreword. And I had known, obviously we all know of Lance, but knew how to get in contact him with him through a friend of a friend, and so did so. And Lance Armstrong used to be a triathlete when he was a teenager, and then, you know, moved into cycling. And I approached him about writing the foreword, and he wrote the foreword, and it was published in my autobiography. And intuitively, I knew, Simon, that that was the wrong decision, because I instinctively knew that his values didn't match mine. And at that point, we didn't know of his past, but I think deep down, like many people, we suspected that he wasn't racing with integrity. And I think deep down I knew that, and I was blinded by this desire to maximize the reach of the book, and maybe not pressurized by my publisher, because I made the decision and the responsibility was mine. But it was a lesson to me that I needed to trust in that instinct and that intuition. And it's, you know, obviously I can't undo that decision, undo that choice, but I do now, going forward, trust in that little inner voice. And it sometimes comes before you've done all of the pros and cons list that you see. So before you even do that, and someone gave me a piece of advice, you know, when I don't know what decision I was trying to make, they were just like, just make a decision. If it's A or B, just make a decision to go to B and see how it makes you feel. And see what that emotion is. And if it feels wrong, you know that that's not the right path. And I don't know, that's always struck me. And I've used that a number of times, because we all have that voice. We all know what aligns with our values and what really matters to us and what is instinctively and intuitively right. But sometimes we don't listen to it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Even down to simple things, like lots of people get in touch with me to come on Don't Tell Me the Score. And generally speaking, I've always listened to it. And there's been once or twice I haven't. And I think I've learned that it tends to be right, you know. And like you said, it does come before pros and cons. I think you can write pros and cons till the cows come home. And you use the word, actually, knowing. So we all have it. And it's just a question of having more faith in it and trust in it and allowing it to show you that actually it can be trusted. Anyway, let's move on, because time pressure is slightly against us. And there's two more things I want to talk to you about. First of all, I just want to quickly talk to you about your coaching. And we've spoke about something that comes up a lot, is the difference between training in sport and the training in real life. So Clive Woodward talks about teacups, so thinking correctly under pressure. Danny Carey had Thinking Thursday, where the whole team would be put under so much pressure so that they learned how to react when the situation actually required it. And this is what happened for you in your training as well, wasn't it?
I had two coaches in my triathlon career, and they were very, very different characters, Simon. So the first one, quite a controversial character, we don't need to go into it here, had a very authoritarian, commanding style. It was very top down. He gave the order and I executed. And when I first went to him, I actually went to him for a kind of a test week to see whether he thought I cut the mustard as a professional athlete. And he said, Chrissy, physically, yeah, you got what it takes, but I'm going to have to cut your head off. And it talks to the fact that we need to hone ourselves psychologically as well as physically when, you know, we're in life, but when we're athletes. And I was very over-analytical, as we spoke about before, very self-critical. And I think he recognised that that would be debilitating. I also got quite flustered under pressure, and I was concerned about what others thought of me. And so he threw me, in retrospect, deliberately into very uncomfortable situations to force me, to Clive Woodward's point, teacup point, to think and act rationally and carefully under pressure. And that was what I needed to work on. I could, you know, annihilate myself physically, Simon. Honestly, I had all this, you know, the drive and determination. But there were other things I didn't quite have a handle on. So he put me in very uncomfortable situations. He engineered uncomfortable relationships between myself and my teammates. He put me into races where I questioned his rationale. And it was all, I think, to carve me into an athlete that was capable of withstanding the pressure that you encounter in endurance racing. And so whilst I don't think his authoritarian commanding style was necessarily sustainable, he helped build my psychological arsenal, which enabled me to succeed. And he was the one that saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And we spoke before about how does one become world champion when World Ironman champion, when I became a professional athlete, I didn't even want to do an Ironman. So how do you go from that to that? And I don't have the answers. I think, firstly, you just take these iterative steps and you slowly prove to yourself that you're capable of so much more than you think. But secondly, you need people like my first coach that can set a goal for you, maybe even without telling you. So I know now that Brett, my first coach, thought I could become world champion, but yet he never told me. He carved out a program with that as the end goal without ever saddling me with the expectation, some would say burden, of that. So it was my responsibility to execute in training, day in, day out, and on race day. And that's what his kind of authoritarian style gave me. He didn't give me a goal. He just told me to execute the best I possibly could on the day. Whilst it was empowering in a certain sense, I don't think that that top-down relationship was sustainable. And I moved coaches. I went to my second coach, Dave Scott, who is an extremely successful Ironman athlete in his own right. But it was a much more reciprocal, holistically empowering relationship based on respect and friendship and a willingness of Dave to learn from me as much as it was me to learn from Dave. And I believe that's what makes a good coach, that they have the expertise, they have the skill, they empower you as an athlete and as a person, but they're also willing to learn. And that was really important. And that's what Dave gave to me. So I can compare and contrast the two styles of coaching, and both enabled me to achieve success. I think I know which one I prefer in the longer term.
Yeah. But the one thing I guess that Brett definitely did do was put you under pressure intentionally to enable you to be able to cope with pressure when it counted. You know, like you said yourself, like you physically were there, your determination to run yourself into the ground was there, but the pressure part got to you. But he put you in those situations and grew that particular comfort zone. And I just think there's a lot to be said for putting yourself in uncomfortable positions, because that's the only way they are going to become comfortable.
And he also liberated me from that self-criticism and self-flagellation, because life was very simple under him. He gave me the training session. I executed, did the best I could. I drew a line under it. So there wasn't space for me to reflect on, oh, was it good? Well, I didn't do this right. I didn't do this right. Oh, I wasn't very good at this. It just was. And then you move on. And I follow the next order. So in many respects, he helped me quieten that voice.
The chatter, yeah.
The constant kind of critical banter. That, like...
Now, I want to talk to you. I want to finish off by talking about one of your latest ventures. So you dipped your toe back into the world of being an author again. So two new books out. You're So Amazing and You're So Strong. And these are books for children, right? So to really empower them. So just in a nutshell, because this does come back to really your values. And also, I think it links nicely with what we were saying about what we can learn from children. And as children age, they can sometimes lose sight of that intrinsic value that is innate. So, yeah, just talk to me a little bit about what inspired you to do this. And more importantly, like what message you are trying to get across, really.
When I transitioned away from professional sport, I wanted to use this incredible platform to inspire positive change and to improve people's holistic health and well-being. And I was really fortunate to become involved with Parkrun and now work as global health and well-being lead for Parkrun. And I feel that as part of my I feel that through this role, I can really impact people in quite a profound and varied way. But I also wanted another channel to impart some of the key life lessons that I've learned and that I'd hope to impart to our daughter. And one of the best channels to do that is through the written word. And so last year I became connected with Susie Bush Ramsey, who was an amazing international track and field athlete in her own right, and had created a mindfulness program called 7 Simple Steps. And like me, she was looking at a way of empowering children and young people, and had come up with the concepts of these two books, essentially using nature and children's interactions with nature to impart some really valuable life lessons. So it's in You're So Amazing, it's the interactions between a girl and a flower, and in You're So Strong, a brother and a sister and a tree. And through nature, we can be taught all of these amazing lessons about dreaming big, about love, about faith, about the power of positive self-talk, about nurturing ourselves with good food and movement. And so really for us, we wanted these books to be a conversation starter, especially coming out of a time where children's physical and mental well-being has been so profoundly impacted. So what we hope is that these books inspire and encourage not only children but also adults to take simple steps to look after themselves, to take care of themselves, and to be empowered to be the very best versions of themselves.
Chrissy, eloquent, beautifully put. I take my hat off to you for everything you've achieved, but particularly as well, this latest venture of yours. I think it's, like you say, children have really been affected, I think, by lockdown. You know, we've got a six-year-old and I've really noticed it. And actually, a little exercise we do it last thing at night, and I've mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again, is we've started doing, you know, something that made you happy, something that made you sad, something that made you worried, something that made you excited. And so she started learning the language of emotions, and it's been really, really powerful. But I just think, yeah, like you say, for a group that has had so much of their life taken up by what we've all gone through over the last year, I really think what you're doing is very admirable, very important. And I'm proud of you yet again. So I will leave it there. Chrissy, thank you very much for coming on. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of yours as an athlete and as a person, more importantly. So just lovely chatting as ever.
Thank you so much for having me on.
thanks for listening to this week's episode, and a huge thank you to Chrissy Wellington. A quick reminder, the big news, we will be changing the name of this podcast in the next few weeks to Life Lessons from Sport and Beyond. As the saying goes, it does what it says on the tin. Do get in touch and let me know your thoughts about the change via my website, simonmundy.com. You can email me there or get in touch on social media at Simon Mundy on Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Like I said, you won't notice any other changes. You don't have to do anything. And I do hope it won't affect your desire to keep listening to the podcast at all. So I do really look forward to hearing from you about this. And until next time, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.